Thank you for listening to this sermon from Arapahoe Road Baptist Church. We hope you enjoy the teaching of Dr. David Rogers, lead pastor of Arapahoe Road. For more information about our church and its ministries, please visit arapahoeroad.org. And now, here's Pastor David Rogers.
You've had that feeling when you realize something, but it's too late. When all you want to do is just step back in time, but all you get is just to turn around and stare at it. And you wish for a different outcome. You wish for a second chance. But you don't get it. I've got a pocket full of those kind of feelings. I was there that day at the foot of the cross. A shell of a man. A heart hardened to emotion, to death, to gore. I was the one that nailed him to it. Like I had done hundreds of times to countless thieves and robbers and rebels that had gone before him. But that man, he did things. He said things. Life just didn't seep out of him. He seemed to decide when to let go. You ever been in a conversation with someone that says that they forgive you, and you kind of bow up because you don't think you need forgiven, but deep down you know there isn't something just quite right, and you do one or two things. You either keep thinking about it and it just makes you angry, or that man, Jesus, that day on the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And then he looked at me. He looked at me. And then it just hit me like a biting wind. I break people. Break their bones. I nail their hands and their feet. I stab them in the side. Why do you need forgiven when you're just doing your job and you're just doing it right? I'm the one that needs to be forgiven. I looked up at him and I knew he was and is the Son of God.
I invite you to take your Bible and open it or turn it on to the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15. All four gospel accounts record the sentencing, scourging, mocking, and crucifixion of Jesus. And to reframe from the scripture what the soldier engaged in on that Good Friday, let's let Mark's account in Mark chapter 15 retell the events in that chapter before we take a deeper look and dive into the scenes on that Good Friday. Mark chapter 15, we'll begin reading in verse 8 and we'll read all the way through to verse 39. Mark 15, beginning in verse 8, says this: "And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying, 'Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?' For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priest had delivered him up. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have him release for them Barabbas instead. And Pilate again said to them, 'Then what shall I do with the man you call the king of the Jews?' And they cried out, 'Crucify him!' And Pilate said to them, 'Why? What evil has he done?' But they shouted all the more, 'Crucify him!' So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released for them Barabbas. And having scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away inside the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole battalion, and they clothed him in a purple cloak, and twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on him, and they began to salute him, 'Hail, King of the Jews!' And they were striking his head with a reed, and spitting on him, and kneeling down in homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. And they led him out to crucify him. And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. And they brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. And they divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him, and the inscription of the charge against him read, 'The King of the Jews.' And with him they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on his left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, 'Aha, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross.' So also the chief priests with the scribes mocked him to one another, saying, 'He saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe.' Those who were crucified with him also reviled him. And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' And some of the bystanders hearing it said, 'Behold, he's calling Elijah.' And someone ran and filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, 'Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down.' And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from the top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. What the Roman soldier who oversaw the crucifixion of Jesus witnessed on Good Friday, it was unlike anything he had ever encountered in his violence-ridden life. I mean, this was a man whose business not only was putting people to death, but also making sure that they felt every inch of its painful accompaniment until his victim's final breath. The soldier, in the video that we saw, he said it well in just three words. He said, "I break people." Now Mark, in his gospel, did the same thing in just three words when he said, "They crucified him." And yet, those three words from each of these two, that they don't fully describe the magnitude of what took place on that day, that Jesus was the soldier's assigned assassination. The gospel accounts, they describe this man who put Jesus to death not only as a soldier, but also as a centurion. A centurion. The centurion in charge likely would have overseen all of the aspects leading to Jesus' fate, from the orders given by Pilate until they were fulfilled in their entirety. While the breaking would end in death, it would begin with the beatings and lead to the mocking and the torturous scourging before the nails pierced the skin and were driven into the wood beam of the cross. Cicero, in 43 BC, a Roman statesman, a scholar, a lawyer, said this about crucifixion. He said, "Crucifixion is the cruelest and the most hideous punishment possible." In more recent times, Dr. C. Truman Davis, a medical doctor, analyzed what happened to Jesus from a medical perspective on that Good Friday, which did end in Jesus' death. His work was entitled "Crucifixion of Jesus." On page 186 to 187, man, there are just grisly details of what happened physiologically in Jesus' body. We don't have time to read all of Dr. Davis's account, but the part that I want to share with you in these next few moments leaves an echo of what the soldier in the video that we watched uttered when he said, "I break people." Dr. C. Truman Davis writes, "Preparations for Jesus' scourging were carried out at Caesar's orders. The prisoner was stripped of his clothing, and his hands were tied to a post above his head. The Roman legionnaire then stepped forward with the flagrum, or the flagellum, in his hand." This was a short whip, as you see here, a short whip, a powerful whip, consisting of several heavy leather thongs with two small balls of lead attached near the ends of each of the leather straps. And this heavy whip was brought down with full force again and again over the shoulders and the back and all down the legs of Jesus. At first, those weighted thongs just cut through the skin only. And then as the blows just continued, they would cut deeper and deeper into the subcutaneous tissues, producing first an oozing of blood from the capillaries and the veins of the skin, and finally they would spurt the arterial bleeding from vessels in the underlying muscles. The small balls of lead, first they would produce deep bruises that were then broken open by subsequent blows all across Jesus' shoulders, back down his legs. And finally, the skin was just hanging in long ribbons. And the entire area was just an unrecognizable mess of torn and bleeding tissue. And when it was determined by the centurion in charge that the prisoner was near death, the beatings finally stopped. Mockery. The half-fainting Jesus was then untied and allowed to just slump down to the stone pavement, wet with his own blood. The Roman soldiers, they saw a great joke in this provincial Jew claiming to be the king. And they threw a robe across his shoulders, and then they placed a stick in Jesus' hand as a mocking scepter. They still needed a crown, though, to make their travesty complete. Small, flexible branches covered with long thorns, commonly used for kindling the fires in the charcoal pits out in the courtyard, were plated in the shape of a crude crown. And then that crown, it was pressed into Jesus' scalp. And again, there was copious bleeding, and the thorns pierced the very vascular tissue. After mocking Jesus, striking him in the face, the soldiers then took the stick from Jesus' hand and they struck him across the head, driving the thorns deeper in his scalp. Finally, they tired of their sadistic sport and they tore the robe from his back. The robe had already become adherent to the clots of blood and the serum in the wounds, and its removal was just as a careless removal of a surgical bandage, and it just caused excruciating pain. The wounds again begin to bleed. Golgotha. In deference to Jewish custom, the Romans apparently returned Jesus' garments. The heavy patibulum of the cross beam, was tied across his shoulders. And the procession of the condemned Christ, and then two thieves, and the execution detail of Roman soldiers, headed by a centurion, began its slow journey along the route which today is known as the Via Dolorosa. In spite of Jesus' efforts to walk erect, the weight of that heavy wooden beam, together with the shock of the copious loss of blood, it was just too much, and Jesus stumbled and he fell, and the rough wood of the beam gouged into his lacerated skin and muscles in his shoulders, And Jesus tried to rise, but human muscles had been pushed beyond their endurance. And the centurion, anxious to proceed with the crucifixion, selected a stalwart North African onlooker, Simon of Cyrene, to carry the cross. And Jesus followed, still bleeding and sweating the cold, clammy sweat of shock. And the 650-yard journey from the fortress Antonia all the way to Golgotha was finally completed. The prisoner was again stripped of his clothing except for a loincloth, which was allowed the Jews. And the crucifixion began. Jesus was offered wine mixed with myrrh, a mild analgesic pain-relieving mixture. He refused to drink. Simon was ordered to place the patibulum on the ground, and Jesus was quickly thrown backward with his shoulders against the wood. The legionnaire felt for the depression at the front of the wrist, and he drove heavy, square, wrought iron nails through the wrist and deep into the wood. And quickly he moved to the other side and he repeated the action, being careful not to pull the arms too tightly, but to allow some flexion and movement. And the patibulum was then lifted into place, and at the top of the stipes, the titleless reading, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, was nailed into place. The left foot was pressed backwards against the right foot with both feet extended, toes down. A nail was driven through the arch of each, leaving the knees moderately flexed. And the victim was now crucified on the cross. As Jesus slowly sagged down with more weight on the nails in the wrist, excruciating, fiery pain shot along the fingers and up the arms and exploded in his brain. The nails in the wrist were putting pressure on the median nerve, large nerve trunks which traverse the mid-wrist and the hand. And Jesus pushed himself upward to avoid this stretching torment. And he placed full weight on the nail through his feet. And again, there was searing agony as the nail tore through the nerves between the metatarsal bones of his feet. And at this point, another phenomenon occurred. As the arms fatigued, great waves of cramps began to sweep over the muscles, knotting them in deep, relentless, throbbing pain. And with these cramps came the inability to push himself upward. And hanging by the arm, the pectoral muscle, the large muscles of the chest just became paralyzed. With the intercostal muscles, the small muscles between the ribs, as they are unable to act, air could be drawn into the lungs, but could not be exhaled. And Jesus, he fought to raise himself in order to get just one short breath. And finally, the carbon dioxide level increased in the lungs and in his bloodstream, and the cramps partially subsided. the last words. Spasmodically, Jesus was able to push himself upward and exhale and inhale life-giving oxygen. And it was undoubtedly during these periods that he uttered seven short sentences that are recorded in the Gospels. The first, looking down at the Roman soldiers who were throwing dice for his seamless garment, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The second word, to the penitent thief, he says, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." The third word, looking down at his mother, Mary, he said, "Woman, behold your son." And then turning to the terrified, grief-stricken John, the beloved apostle, he said, "Behold your mother." The fourth cry is from the beginning of Psalm 22, when Jesus says, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He suffered hours of limitless pain, cycles of twisting, joint-rending cramps, intermittent, partial asphyxiation, and searing pain in his tissues were just torn from his lacerated back, his movement up and down on the cross, those rough timbers of the cross. And then another agony began. The deep, crushing pain as the pericardium, it's the sac around the heart, slowly filled with serum and began to compress the heart. And the prophecy of Psalm 22:14 was being fulfilled, which says, "I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels." The end was rapidly approaching. The loss of tissue fluids had reached a critical level. The compressed heart was struggling to pump heavy, sluggish blood to the tissues and to the tortured lungs. They were making a frantic effort to inhale gulps of air, and the markedly dehydrated tissues sent their flood of stimuli to the brain. And Jesus gasped his fifth cry, "I thirst." Again, we read in the prophetic psalm, Psalm 22:15, which says, "My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws, and thou hast brought me into the dust of death." A sponge soaked in posca, the cheap sour wine that was the staple drink of the Roman legionnaires, was lifted to Jesus' lips, and his body was now an extremist. He could feel the chill of death beginning to creep through his tissues. This realization, it brought forth Jesus' sixth word, possibly little more than a tortured whisper: "It is finished." Jesus' mission of atonement had completed. Finally, he could allow his body to die. And with one last surge of strength, he once again pressed his torn feet against the nail, straightened his legs, took a deeper breath, and uttered his seventh and last cry, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Death. Now, the common method of ending a crucifixion was by crurifracture. Crurifracture is the breaking of the bones in the legs. Why? Well, this prevented the victim from pushing upward. The tension then could not be relieved from the muscles of the chest, and then rapid suffocation occurred. So the legs of the two thieves were broken, but when the soldiers approached Jesus, they saw this was unnecessary. Apparently, to make sure, doubly sure of his death, the legionnaire drove his lance between the ribs, upward through the pericardium and into Jesus' heart. John 19, verse 34 states, "And immediately there came out blood and water." Thus there was an escape of watery fluid from the sac surrounding the heart and the blood of his interior heart. This is rather conclusive post-mortem evidence that Jesus died. Not the usual crucifixion death by suffocation, but of heart failure due to shock and constriction of the heart by the fluid in the pericardium. And in these events, we have seen a glimpse of the epitome of evil that man can exhibit toward his fellow man and toward God. This is an ugly sight and is likely to leave us despondent and depressed. And although the soldier in charge of Good Friday may have become callous to his breaking of people all throughout his career, something broke through in his own life on that Good Friday. Because what he saw and what he heard coming from the life and the lips of Jesus over those riveting hours was unlike anything that soldier had ever witnessed before. As stated in the video, perhaps it did leave him with a pocket full of regrets. We don't know all that such an analogy might entail, nor how such an encounter with Jesus may have impacted this man of gore, this man who dealt in blood. We don't know what that interaction with Jesus may have done as far as this soldier believed about Jesus. But regardless, the Gospels state what the centurion said at the cross once Jesus died. Matthew 27, 54 states this, "When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, 'Truly this was the Son of God.'" Luke chapter 23, verse 47 says, "Now when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God, saying, 'Certainly this man was innocent.'" Mark 15, 39 records, "And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, 'Truly this man was the Son of God.'" Now, while only God can be certain of these confessions of the centurion and what they might have meant regarding his belief in Jesus as the one and only Son of God, the innocent one who died in our place to rescue the world from sin. We do know that the events of Good Friday, they impacted this man. Perhaps his story and his words in the video connect with us today in an impacting way. Let me just ask you some questions. Do you break people? Do your words pierce their sides? Do your actions break their bones? Do we live with pockets full of regrets? Hey, nobody's perfect. All have sinned and fallen short of God's intended best for our lives. The scriptures teach that none of us are righteous. No, not one. Every single person needs to be forgiven for the way that we do break people, and we need to find healing from the brokenness that sin has caused in our own lives, mine and yours alike. The soldier, he seemed to be having a breakthrough on that Good Friday. What about you? Will you allow yourself to come face to face with the fact that what Jesus went through on that day was in part to allow you to believe on this day? May our response to the cross of Christ be in line with what the centurion did in praising God, in declaring with his lips on that day. Yet, may it be exclaimed with unquenchable, undeniable belief in Jesus that truly this man was and is the Son of God.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to distribute this recording, but please do not sell or alter it in any way. For more information about Arapahoe Road Baptist Church, please visit our website at arapahoeroad.org. Arapahoe Road Baptist Church is located at 2256 Arapahoe Road in Garland, Texas, with Sunday morning worship service at 10:45 a.m. We hope you'll join us this week.